Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Surviving the Shift, a show where spirituality meets practicality, with your host, Michelle Arbeau.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Surviving the Shift. I'm your host, Michelle Arbeau. Tonight, we have, as a special guest, Eric Rankin. Eric is the author of Amazon.com's highest-rated book on the subject of 2012. His novel, The Aquarians, 2012, A New Era Begins, is a tale of love, hope, and the idea that the dawning of the Age of Aquarius represents the era of enlightenment that so many cultures and religions have predicted. So I'd like to bring Eric on. Eric's going to be discussing with us a bit more about his book and what it represents, and it really is a fascinating tale. So I'd like to bring Eric on without further ado. Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, Michelle. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am great. A wonderful day out here in Southern California. We've had an off summer, very gray and dreary, but it's a beautiful day today, so I'm happy.
Great. Yeah, it's sunny here, too, so I'm sure it's not as warm and sunny as it is in California, but, you know, we're doing okay. So, Eric, let's just dive right in here, because we have a lot to cover, and I'd like to, you know, really get into the meat and potatoes of the background of your book and the tale leading up to the development of the writing of it. So, really, I'd like you to start from the beginning and tell me your story and tell me how this all evolved into this book.
Sure, and I know you're in the process of reading it yourself. The main character is sort of a superficial Hollywood-aligned guy. He just feels that everything exterior is what matters in his life. He's got the car and the boat and the beautiful house on the beach, and he grew up in the yachting industry, and a lot of that was my experience. My family owned a yacht brokerage in Newport Beach on the harbor. I grew up in that industry. I sold boats. I was a Coast Guard licensed boat captain. I did a lot of boat work for movies and television, so I felt closely aligned with that. And being out on the water, doing either demo rides or just my own pleasure boating or shakedown cruises, a lot of dolphins here in the local waters of Southern California, both the Pacific Whiteside, which travel in big pods, and then bottlenose dolphins, which everybody recognizes as, you know, SeaWorld and Flipper and all that. And it got to be where, just out on these cruises, you sense that there was real interaction with the animal in you. They approach you. They love to ride the bow wave of the boat as it pushes forward, this, you know, perpetual wave of water that they can surf. But even not doing that, you can stop the boat, and they will approach you. And it just got to me that I could tell that there was this intelligence going on there, whether it's the way they turn to look at you, or almost seeming like really wanting to interact with you, curious about you. And this is going back into the 80s for me. And I had taken some writing classes in college, and I just said, I'm going to write a book about dolphins, and kind of began investigating more and more information that was available then. And there was a lot of research just sort of finishing up with dolphins that sort of bridged the kind of little cosmic experience, what some people feel about dolphins, and all the science about dolphins. The two worlds were merged a lot closer than they are now, where science is fully in one camp, and the New Agers who love dolphins and use all kinds of airy-fairy terms to describe them, they're off in another camp. But I did tons of research, and the more I learned about dolphins, the more it almost felt like I was discovering this alien race that was living amongst us, sharing the planet with us. Some facts that I incorporate as genuine facts. My book is a novel. It tells this story, but I incorporated tons of facts and about different things, the Mayan calendar and this shifting of ages and dolphins. And some things about dolphins is, first thing, their brain size. A 200-pound dolphin will have a third larger brain than a 200-pound human being.
Wow.
Nearly as complexly designed and folded, two huge hemispheres, almost like two separate brains joined at the cortex, just huge processing power. They have hand skeletons. Dolphins lived on land 40 million years ago as a land creature, four legs, walked around, and then the whales and dolphins, their ancestors went back into the oceans, and they still have every arm that a human has, I mean every bone that a human has in their hand, wrist, arm, forearm, shoulder, clavicle, a dolphin has still to this
day.
Wow,
that's amazing. Wow.
It is. I was just blown away by it. And the dolphins are conscious breathers. Every single breath that a dolphin takes in its life, from first breath at birth to its last breath of death, is a thought it thinks about taking, a breath it thinks about taking. And I'm like, wow, how in the moment is a dolphin if, you know,
exactly,
they have to think about every single breath they're going to take. And that just felt like something huge. And then, of course, what my book involves a lot of is research being done in echolocation. And that opened a huge door for me, the way dolphins incorporate echolocation to receive more or less bounced back images that they recreate in their mind using sound. And they can even see into each other or through other fish or other organic organisms, to where it's like a virtual, like a MRI scan. They can see into each other. They can see what another dolphin ate or see if there's ulcers or tumors or anything like that. And I'm like, wow, they're living this transparent existence that so many people talk about, that someday, you know, that's the way we should be trying to live, is transparently to one another. They do that every day just without even thinking about it. So I knew I had to write about a book about dolphins, and that's what set me off. I didn't know where it was necessarily going, but that's what set me off, was this passion I developed and still have to this day about dolphins. And it did grow into a story of like, well, if they went back to the oceans 40 million years ago and they look just today, they look, a dolphin looks just like it did 40 million years ago. You can't say that about humanity. You go back a million years and the human being looks really different than it does today. We have a very brief time span of how we've lived our lives. And of course, if you're talking about living a modern existence like we do, you're only talking about the last 5,000 years or so of living in cities and buildings and agrarian culture. So it's like, maybe dolphins really know something about this whole world system, the way it works and what it's been like and what it's going to be like in the future, and tuned into it. So that's what I started meshing into the story, was dolphins might be tuned in, might know something that it would be beneficial for humans to learn.
Yes, and you know, I find it really interesting that this kind of research or this kind of information is not more widely known, because really, you know, I read a lot, and I'm just always thirsty for information, and I really didn't know a lot of these facts, and I'm sure a lot of people listening didn't know a lot of these facts either, and I just find it very unusual that something that would be such groundbreaking information that isn't, you know, widely available.
That's the way it always hits me. I mean, I will still watch new shows about dolphins. I through either Facebook or my website or something, I meet dolphin lovers all the time. And many of them do not know, or the shows do not promote this information. The most fascinating information that I think about dolphins, their physiology, their ultrasonic capabilities, this transparent existence that they live, why don't people know that? Or why, if it's so fascinating, why aren't television shows sharing that information if it's a show about dolphins? I don't quite get it, but it's okay. You know, it's out there, and it sounds like fiction. When you write it into a story, it sounds like that can't even be real. So it's a perfect vehicle for me to incorporate into a novel.
Yes, and you know what? I was very skeptical when I started to read your book, because I thought, it's a novel, it's fiction, I don't read fiction, you know, I'm not a big fiction fan. How are you going to tell the story of the Mayan calendar, the Age of Aquarius, the 2012, in a novel, in a fiction novel? And I was very skeptical, but it's really well done in the fact that it weaves a lot of the fact with the fiction, and it's just a perfect combination, and it really flows well. So,
thank you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
For that. Writers love to hear that people are enjoying their work, and I've gotten lots of great response. It's funny, more response than I ever would have really thought, from people who've aligned with something. It's not always the same something in the book. There's people who feel super aligned with a particular character, or there is a lot of sort of philosophy, I suppose, that comes through in the book. It's not a hammer that hits you over the head and demanding that you buy into any certain belief system, whether it's about 2012 or the end of the Mayan calendar. But it does bring, I'm hoping that the story makes someone go, you know, that's interesting. It makes me want to learn more. My book has been called a great gateway book. You know, it's like the primer of if someone you know has been hearing about the shift and hearing about 2012 and the more positive aspects of it. I guess we should say right now that my book takes the positive high road about what's going on with this shift. And as we head into the end of the Mayan calendar and into the age of Aquarius, and it's just a great introduction into some of these concepts and ideas without demanding that, you know, you have to believe what I believe and that's all there is.
Exactly. You know, when I read it, that's exactly how I felt. I was very intrigued, but nothing was being pushed upon me at all. I'm almost finished the book, and I'm so curious. I want to look into more about the Mayans and more about the Age of Aquarius because I really hadn't done a lot of research in the past about it. So this book is just, like you say, it's like the gateway because it just, you know, it just tweaks your interest and just gets you going with the whole notion that there is more, you know, to all of this.
Yeah. Well, that was my intent, and, you know, it's my first novel. I've written short articles for boating magazines, and I do love to write, but it's my first novel, and I have a friend who formed a writer's group, and she was instrumental in kind of just keeping me on task of flushing out this story, and I would suggest that to anybody writing a book, because get people around you that support you, because it's very easy to have your energy just flag and think of all the daunting things ahead of you, trying to find agents or, you know, how it's going to be published and everything else. But this is just a story that felt like it had to be told, and I was the person that got to tell it. So I'm really thrilled, and I have just met so many amazing people from around the world. I can't believe that I'll get emails from people in Europe or Asia and Australia read the book and, you know, vibrated with it somehow. It's being translated into a few different languages, and it's just been such a thrill to connect with people and know pre-internet, you know, how would you find these people, per se, and that they get to share this exchange back and forth like we do on Facebook. And it's I know that everything is just kind of coming to a head at the same time, that these people that maybe didn't know there were so many of them out spread around the world feeling this same positive shift message, that we can find each other now and connect. And it's been nothing short of miraculous to me.
Yes, and, you know, it's so interesting when, you know, someone writes a book like this, and like you say, all of this synchronicity and just coincidence seems to flow into it, and you know that it's bigger than you, and it's something that was divinely inspired, for sure. And you had mentioned that to me in the past, Eric, that, you know, all along the flow of the writing and how it all came together was very almost like divinely inspired or channeled information or whatever you want to call it.
It felt like that. It really did. I mean, every process of getting it down, telling the story, even as I was investigating the book, doing research, because my book is full of facts. I mean, it's full of real science, full of real information, some real archaeology about the Mayan calendar and the Mayan culture. You know, and I wanted it to have this feeling of genuineness throughout, and to be able to, just as I was doing the research, new things would pop into my awareness. I'm like, oh my gosh, it just felt like the book was all but writing itself. As I was writing it and have new information that fit perfectly into the story, it's at times it will make the hairs on my arm stand up still, because it's just like almost impossible to believe it.
Yes. The quiz on your website, now you had mentioned to me, now correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought I recalled you saying that this quiz was after the fact, or this was something that came in later. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Okay, because the quiz,
sure,
I find is very, very interesting, because all of the points, I know you call it the Aquarian quiz, but I find that all of the points really point to someone who's living through their authentic or their spiritual self? Because every point resonated with me. I know it really struck a chord with me, a lot of the different points, and some of the things I really didn't even realize about myself, but they really resonated with me, and I thought that was really neat that this came after the fact, that this just came out of nowhere for you, and it was definitely another divinely inspired piece of the puzzle.
It did, and if people are talking about, you know, if they don't know what website we're talking about, it's theaquarianage.com, and there's a great rap song that's a whole little story in itself of how that came to be, but the quiz is there. It's 40 questions, and yeah, and when I use the word Aquarian, I'm not catering to people only born under the star sign of Aquarius. We are moving into the scientific. I mean, when we talk about ages, and we can talk about that a bit, when we talk about ages, they are actual scientific measurements of time. They're astronomical measurements of time of 2,100 approximate years. We are moving out of the age of Pisces, and we're moving into the age of Aquarius. And it takes 26,000 years to move through all these different ages. And if someone really wanted to know how you define an age, it is the vernal equinox sun rising within the constellation or the parameter of a certain constellation for roughly 2,100 years. And because the tilt of our Earth, the axis has a slight wobble to it, the vernal equinox sun will shift. It'll take 26,000 years, but it'll actually shift out of one constellation into the next for the next 2,100 years, into the next for 2,100 years. So we're at the final days of living in the age of Pisces and moving into the age of Aquarius. So when all these Aquarian ideas, I put in context like we are living under the umbrella of Aquarian energy, not that it's in as defined. We've all heard that song, you know, this is the dawning of the age of Aquarius back from the fifth dimension in the 60s. And obviously, they were talking about some sort of cosmic shift in consciousness back then. This is not new information in defining what the Aquarian Age is all about. In fact, when we use the words New Age, I didn't know this, but whenever we use New Age music or New Age that or New Age, you know, hoo-ha, the New Age that it's referring to specifically is Aquarius. That's always what the term New Age was was alliterating to, was Aquarian Age. So that's why my book's called The Aquarians. We'll all be living under, you know, the sign of Aquarius for the next 2,000 years. So we'll all be Aquarians to some degree or another.
Right. And this Pisces Aquarius is more in alignment with astrology or the study of the stars, I guess you could say. That's how they're figuring out the different alignments. Is that what you're talking about?
Well, yeah, and you know, it gets a little blurry, obviously, if we're talking about astronomy, the science that talks about the physical aspects of cosmic movement, the sun rising up through the field of stars, this particular constellation, all that still fits very comfortably into astronomy, where astrology, let's call it the pseudoscience that it is, that, you know, over the years has been shaped by perception. It's been shaped by mankind. It's been shaped by ideologies or spirituality. And these different ages, for whatever reason, you know, people are born at a time of year and they're born under a particular birth sign. I'm Capricorn, and I don't know when your birthday is. And you can read
Capricorn.
Well, you can read some profile information, go, yeah, that describes me pretty well. And it's like, okay, which came first, the description and people seem to fit it, or was it because people born in that time of year seem to a type of description seemed to bubble up to the surface of our consciousness to where we could sort of define a Capricorn personality, an Aquarian personality, you know, a Taurian personality, and it seems to be sort of true. So
yes.
I toe the line in my book. You know, I don't go very deep into astrology, but you can't deny it either. I also make the point in my book that you have enough people feeling the influence of their birth sign and of the personality traits assigned to it. And what, even if it's people's perception only about you, it sort of shapes your reality. So to turn a complete blind eye from astrology and say, you know, it's all hogwash and it doesn't matter, I wouldn't do that either, because it has influenced our culture for at least 2,000 years, more like 3,000 years when the Babylonians, they were the first ones to really start assigning more or less personality to these ages and to the different sun signs. And it's carried through. We still, I mean, so many people are really aware of their astrological background and, you know, influence and things like that. And it does, what fascinates me is this Aquarian age falls into, we talk about sort of a moving out of one type of age and thinking and into another. And we're moving into that age of Aquarius where it's peace and love centered, and moving out of age of Pisces, which has been described as a little more conflicted. We're sort of attuned with a spiritual message, almost a Christ conscious message, and yet we don't incorporate it very well into our daily lives. So we have this sort of shift ideology that's been floating out there for a long, long time, that we would be shifting out of an age, a certain mindset, and into another. And the next one is a more expansive, more growth-oriented, more, you know, consciousness integrated. And I think, well, that's cool. That's a great standalone aspect of it. But then you start looking at the Mayan calendar and what modern Mayan shamans will tell you this whole 2012 shift is about. It's not about the end of the world. It's not, you know, destruction of life as we know it. It's the end of a certain type of existence as we've known it, and the beginning of a next. A new 5,000-year-long long count calendar will begin on December 22nd, 2012. And that, when that begins, it's all about expanded consciousness. A lot of shamans will tell you it's next level of consciousness. And I was like, wow, what a thematic, I mean, overlay. It's like the two templates. You could put one on top of the other and say even they're coming from two different directions, Mayan culture and numerology and their calendar keeping and a whole other astrological study, and they're meshing and merging and coming up with this message and theme of we're moving out of one type of existence and moving into a higher vibrational, higher sense of ourselves, more attuned with light, love, compassion, peace. And that's written into, woven into the fabric of my book, but only because it was so fascinating to me to realize that.
Yeah, sorry, I had a little frog in my throat there. So the Aquarian quiz on your website, I'd like you to read a few of the key traits of that, because I find it so fascinating, and this will kind of tie in with what you were talking about, because it really points to, like you say, living in a love-centered existence, being our true spiritual self and all of that. So if you could, Eric, if you could read some of the main characteristics of what an Aquarian-type lifestyle or an Aquarian would be like.
Well, if people want to take the quiz, it's very easy to do, and after you take the quiz, you'll get a numerical value for how much you felt aligned with these 40 questions. And after that, there's an evaluation to kind of put you into how attuned to this Aquarian shift are you. And so we have something that's like more or less the non-Aquarian that's just does not feel aligned with any of this. And it's not putting even that down. You know, we are a culture that's grown up a certain way. Even if you just look at the North America, United States, Canada, Mexico, the religious overlay that we've lived with, the way we get things done, the conflict resolution through war and battle, our fear-based mentality, those have sort of served us to a point, but they're not very Aquarian-minded. So if you grew up thinking, you know, dog eat dog, looking out for number one, it's me against the world, it's probably serving you to a degree, but it's not very Aquarian-minded of it. And maybe you feel like you'd like to be a little more open to that, so it kind of shifts you a little higher in the number, and you'd be sort of that latent Aquarian, is that this stuff all sounds good to you, and you're still not fully engaged. And that would be a lot of people, you know, going to church and hearing a Christ-conscious message or whatever. It doesn't have to be a Christian message. It could be any of the Muslim message or Hindu message. They all have a message of something higher, better conduct. Of course, it's gotten polluted over years, but there's this theme of dig deep, be compassionate, look out for your fellow man, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. That's a theme that runs through virtually almost any religion. And it seems to vibrate with us. We go to church, we hear it, we feel like it washes over us, yet we don't fully engage it as we go out into the world. So that would be sort of a latent Aquarian. And then if you're a little more aligned, you could be a practicing Aquarian, where you've learned these things, you've heard the message of higher consciousness, and it's meant something to you, and you open your mind and heart to it, and you take a step forward sort of in faith, and it opens more doors, and you meet more people that are connected to being, very often you'll hear more spiritual, less religious. That seems to be a huge trend in this whole shift process. And it's certainly true for me. I grew up in a religious background, but now I would describe myself much more spiritual than aligned with any one message of any one religion. And it's actually doing your best. Nobody's going to do it all, but doing your best to incorporate as much as you can into your daily life and recognizing the opportunities to be non-judgmental, forgiving, compassionate, you know, sharing hope and spreading peace. That's what a practicing Aquarian would do. And then maybe someone like you, I think you said you got near 200 on the score, which is as high as you can get. That would just be sort of a person who's a natural born Aquarian who just feels, this is who I've always been. I've maybe never been a perfect fit in modern society. I've been almost considered a little freakish and almost outcast just because my views are so almost extreme that I just function from a place of love and gratitude and, you know, blue sky all the time, that people just like, who and what are you kind of thing. and to those people I say, you know, before you pat yourself on the back, is that you probably feel called to be doing more with your life. If you've grown up since a child knowing that you hold this message of the betterment of mankind and no harm and moving forward in peace, you need to be getting busy doing your part to promote the process. And that's sort of the four
Absolutely.
Levels of that.
And I completely agree with you with the religion side of things. Like you say, you know, there are a lot of people who are still in traditional religion and things like that, and that's fine. You know, we're all in different parts of the path or different stages of the path. But I think as a whole, even the people that are in still, you know, traditional religion and they seem to be happy with that, I think there's still that call to more or that call to find their own spirituality. So I think a lot of people would resonate with your quiz, absolutely, because when I did it myself, you know, I was very surprised that I got such a high score because I wasn't anticipating that I would be that high. But there are things in the quiz that, you know, things like being drawn to water or, you know, being aware of synchronicity or repeating number sequences, things like that, you know. Of course, I was aware of those things, but not, I guess, especially the water. That really struck me because, over the past 5 years or so, I've been really drawn to water, and I couldn't imagine not living on the coast. That, you know, that would be scary for me to have to move inland in the middle of, you know, Canada. I live in Canada, so living in the middle of Canada somewhere, that would be really, you know, just crazy scary for me. I couldn't handle it. I need water now. And that's just over the past 5 years or so that's really, you know, and when I did your quiz, I thought, wow, that's really neat.
Well, that's a funny thing, too, because, you know, I sort of test marketed the quiz on a few friends without telling them that I even wrote it. And it's like, hey, I found this, you know, online or whatever, what I said. And some people, or there were people that did know I wrote it, and it's like, you're just describing yourself. I mean, you wrote this quiz that only you would score like a perfect score on. I'm like, well, maybe I did. I don't know. I just wrote this thing as it came out. It's actually, you know, such a simple thing. But of course, people have contacted me, and even if they don't score high, the funny thing is how much people say they like it, unlike you, that don't score, you know, just off the chart. I think you scored higher on it than I did, but are somewhere in the latent Aquarian and just feel like, wow, something about taking this little quiz has just sort of brought into the forefront of my mind where I am on a path of spirituality. It sort of has helped me define who I am and what I believe and where I would or would not like to move. And that's really been amazing to me in this whole process, is just when I hear that. And I know that like a mini version of the book just came through in a way that I just felt like that came from some place and something bigger than me. And it's funny how much people connect with it.
Yeah, it was really amazing for me. So I encourage anyone to go on the website and take the quiz, because I think it'll be very surprising to you when you do the quiz. And that the website, again, is theaquarianage.com, and the link to the quiz is on the first page. So, Eric, I wanted to go back a little bit and just talk about the dolphin issue again, because I wanted to mention something about the sonography and the whole idea that dolphins can transmit images to each other. And when I read that, I thought to myself, that is exactly what we do when we're intuitively tuning into someone. So if we're, you know, sometimes we'll get images or messages, or, you know, for example, when I'm tuning in to do a reading with someone, I'm literally seeing images that aren't my own, and it's like that. So when the dolphins are doing this, it's almost like they're being telepathic, or they're using their spiritual self to do these, you know, relaying these images and messages to each other.
Yeah, well, and there is a bit of a divide and a bit of a crossover and a bit of a blend there. Now, I am not a person that would say that I receive those images and like that, or like I know that some people do, or even use the term ESP. And yet, when you talk about what dolphins, they may very well be capable of doing. Now, this is a little bit of a stretch of the science, and I guess we'll talk about it a little bit. Dolphins, we are all familiar by now of ultrasound photography. You know, if a woman's pregnant, she goes, gets an ultrasound, this device is vibrating, rubbing on her belly, and you get to see this image. That's ultrasound. That's ultrasound imagery. And that's about 40,000 hertz. That's a vibrational hertz sending this sound back into a transducer and creating an image from it. Well, dolphins can almost double that. 80,000 hertz is what they're capable of emitting biologically through this jawbone. And then, so they know that they're receiving back very amazingly detailed images in their mind. And one of the theories is why dolphins have such big brains has a lot to do with what we know about computers now, is that the biggest reason we need tons of memory in computers, tons of storage space, is for imagery. It's the images and the interactivity that take up all that storage. Text and stuff does not, but when we start processing imagery, it does. So the theory is, well, maybe dolphins, they receive back a bounce-back image. Let's say that I was a dolphin and I looked at a turtle and I sent out my ultrasonic pulse. It came back to me and I saw this beautiful three-dimensional turtle in my mind, and I could store it there like a file. And then maybe a year later, you know, I would be swimming next to you and say, you know what, there was this one time I saw this really cool turtle, and I could just blast you the stored image of that turtle to where it just went straight to you, and you saw the same three-dimensional, non-degraded, perfect image that I had seen a year ago. And so it is almost like a biological ESP, but actually grounded in that it could be an actual physical thing that they do, where they can communicate with these sonographic picto images. And there are many scientists. I read a book about a year ago, long after I'd written my book, and a scientist just said, yes, they do this. I mean, they absolutely send these picture images to each other. I was like, well, I don't know where the proof is in that, but it's amazing to think that science has come that far and to say, not only is it possible, but very probable that they do this. So it's so different than how we would live our lives. I mean, imagine, and so combine this ability to see into each other. If you and I were having a conversation at dinner, and I asked you how you were, and vocally you said, "Oh, I'm fine," but I turned on my ultrasound and I just gave this blast through your body. And I could see that, you know, your heart was racing and your pulse was fast and your sweat glands were opening up and it looked like you hadn't eaten in 3 days and, you know, all these things. I could see all that. And I'm like, wait a minute, you're not fine. You just said you're fine on the surface, but in reality, I sense that there's a whole lot more going on with you. That's an amazing capability. That is almost like ESP. They're doing it, again, in a very physical way. We probably will never be able to do it in the way that a dolphin does it, but let's say that you and I had a pact that we're going to go out to dinner And there's going to be absolutely no secrets, no presentation, no wearing of the masks, knowing what each other wants to hear. And maybe something devastating is going on in your life. And when I come down to asking you, how are you, you are 100%, 100% honest. Anything I would ask you, you would share. And so you would become transparent by your own free will. You would say, I'm not going to put up a false presentation. I'm going to be genuine and share. And that creates a whole new dynamic. If I trust that and believe it, well, then I sort of lower my defenses as well and say, okay, we're in that place where we can be 100% honest with each other. That's a new dynamic for how we could live. And it's our choice to be that way. We could be more dolphin-like by choice. We couldn't do it biologically, but we could do it on our own volition.
Yes, yeah, and that's the message that struck me, you know, like you were saying, the transparency of the dolphins. It's literally, you know, they can't hide from each other. They, you know, they know everything about the other dolphin, and, you know, that's how we're moving. That's what we're moving towards is, you know, living in that truth, and that's, you know, and I guess I do live that way, you know, somewhat now. You know, I'll have my moments, as we all do. You know, we have that darn ego that keeps coming back over and over again. But really, you know, for many years I've always been called Tell It Like It Is Michelle, because I'd always, you know, if anyone asked me a question or anything, I would just say it like it was, and you know, I wouldn't sugarcoat it. I would, you know, I'd answer anything that anyone had asked me. And I think when you were, I had to laugh silently when you were talking about being an outcast and being, you know, shunned, because really I was. And I think now I'm just becoming more accepted to be able to speak that truth.
And it's a refreshing place, you know. And oddly, look at us, this global now, this global connectedness that we have is one thing. Instantly, we can just communicate in just a casual chat with people all over the world. But at the same time, and this is what's, people ask me, do you think anything's really going to happen, this whole shift thing, this 2012 thing? And I'm like, look around you. If you don't think it's already happening, that this process, I'm a big believer that nothing in itself is going to happen on December 21st, 2012, but that we are in this process of shifting out of one sort of existence and into another, I'm living that process. I'm living in an area, I mean, Newport Beach, California could not be more attached to egocentric living of how much you have and the car that you drive and the yacht that you own and the houses. You got to be everything beautiful, and your physical appearance could, it's so all about that. And yet in the last year or so, people that were very much into the presentation are all of a sudden quite open with, you know, it's all kind of falling apart and my world's not ending. You know, it's like I'm making it. In some ways, it's even better that I'm not worried about telling you that how great my life is, and worried that my car is looking perfect and it's the newest model. I am a firm believer that we are in the process of this shift happening, where this transparency is being allowed. And it took something like this almost global meltdown of the economy and other things going on, that, you know, whether it's environmental, this oil spill we've had, or rising sea levels. I mean, there's so much going on that is challenging us to question our status quo thinking about life. And the backside of it seems to be much more genuine. We're less about the presentation and more about the reality of what we are as this unique human species. And there's such a depth to what we're capable of. We all feel it, and it's so special, those moments that we have when they come out, when we can share openly and compassionately without fear of judgment from others. And it feels to me like more and more of those moments are happening all the time, and that's just thrilling.
And you know what else? This is coming from a numerological standpoint. When I was calculating some of the West Coast areas, in particular, BC, my husband and I are looking at moving, so we're thinking, you know, coast, we have to be on the coast. And so I happened to do California, and what I found was interesting about California is that it adds to a seven, and seven is the truth-seeker energy. And so you say that it's very superficial and everyone's worried about status, but it's slowly changing, because the vibration of the entire state of California is the seven, which is that deeper meaning, always seeking that truth. So I found that very interesting. that.
And it would seem that, you know, we've always had that reputation of being a little wacky and the, you know, hippies and all that stuff. So that seems to be accurate.
Yeah, and, you know, the East Coast, the East Coast is a little bit, I guess, lagging behind in the whole spiritual movement, you know, the New Age and all of that. We're a little bit behind the times. And, you know, a lot of the areas on the East Coast don't have those spiritual type energies associated with, you know, the name and things like that. So I just found it a neat coincidence that although California is deemed the most superficial of all of the U.S., pretty much, that it's the true seeker energy, which is very interesting.
That is. And I know a lot of people like that. I know, you know, traveling to either promoting the book or giving talks or whatever, that there is a lot of people opening up evermore. That's the beauty of it. It's not just that you've arrived at this place. It's, we all feel like the path just forever unwinds. You know, every day is just another step down the path of opening up, and the process never ends. You don't reach, you know, some sort of fixed status and you can stand on the mountaintop and say, look here, everyone, we've arrived. We all know that this is movement, and it's a journey that just doesn't end. I mean, the earthly journey ends when you stop taking your last breath, but it's that journey of learning and opening up to it and trusting that you can open up to it, trusting that you know, we've been so fear-motivated, and I do believe it has served us, you know, that the way we've grown from sort of that Cro-Magnon caveman existence of, you know, if you didn't have a wary eye out for the animal that might eat you, we might not be around. So there was a reason to stay alert, but it feels like it's not serving us anymore to be driven and motivated by a place of fear. And we so do that. We're so lagging this old vibrational fear energy with us into so many of the decisions we make. You know, it's, will I have enough? And, you know, how people are going to perceive me? And am I saving enough? And, you know, providing enough? And it's just the very background hum noise of it is fear. And we don't have to. You don't have to. And what people are opening up to, at least where I'm living, is we're comfortable with less. You know, we're actually happy not worrying about buying the next new car and keeping all the presentation facade up and running. We're actually relieved that we can relax a little bit. And boy, I tell you, when you really get down to it and think, what do I really need? How much do I really need? How much structure around me? How many clothes? What type of transportation do I really, really need? It's a very short list of what we need to survive. And the message, of course, is there are people around the world that have very little and are very happy, and there's races, cultures that have tons and are, you know, killing themselves with, and I'd say North America would be the shining example of that, you know, just acquiring to our peril. But you know, nothing stays the same. We've constantly been moving, evolving. Our technology challenges us to look at life different ways, and no more than right now, where our technology is opening up this. Everything is now opened up. You can become a Facebook friend with someone that you thought was your bitter enemy. You know, I mean, whether it was someone in Iraq or someone, you go, wow, there's a human being that shares a lot of my similar outlooks on life that I just regarded as the, you know, dark and scary them. And all of a sudden, those walls are crumbling of us versus them mentality. Also, in this cosmic moment of this end of Mayan calendar, beginning age of Aquarius, 2012 shift. It's amazing.
Yes, and you know, I find that so interesting that you were talking about the materialism and all of that. My husband, for example, he's not really into the whole New Age thing. You know, he doesn't really embrace his spirituality, I guess you could say. He's very grounded in the physical, and I think he's curious, but he's not really on board with everything. And I find it so neat to watch him evolving over the past several months, probably more like a year. He was very into home improvements, very much into buying things, and he's a nine, so nines typically are very much materialistic. They like pretty shiny things. They like to spend money normally. So for him, it's very out of the ordinary that he just suddenly drops, you know, wanting to do home improvements, wanting to buy things. He's just, it's been a 180 shift for him, and it's really neat to see, you know, someone who wasn't embracing the spiritual at all, and then, you know, watching that unfold. It's very interesting.
Well, energy, you know, does move, and it radiates out, and, you know, I would think that anybody could feel whether, you know, however it affected your husband, whether talking with buddies or something, they feel that the pressure's off a little bit, maybe, you know. We're not as worried about as much going out and getting the next thing, which is, you could call it a new age, a new age thought. It's a new age thought that's been given, handed down to us through multiple different religions, but I would call it a new age thought, a new mentality. The very words new era and new age are mentioned numerous times in the Bible. So it seems to me like there has been this this idea floating out there. It seems to be almost ingrained in our DNA that there is something that we're moving into. And you could call it kingdom of heaven, or you could call it nirvana or whatever, but it feels like there's something in us that vibrates with that. And, you know, everybody just has their own speed and time and approach and the way it happens for them. Because it's more about relaxing. I wear a Tommy Bahama baseball hat that says relax all the time, and I'm very much into taking life easy. It's less work. This whole new age thing, people so often think it's just a new religion and it's just full of its own new words and, you know, all this wacky stuff. But in reality, it's that comfortable place where you just acknowledge, yes, I believe certain basic things. I believe in the goodness of humanity. I believe that we don't need a lot of things. I believe in love. I believe that peace is the right idea. You could call those new age concepts, and almost anybody would say at some level, yeah, I do believe in that, and I would like to live in that expression of that more than not. It's easier. It's less of a burden to carry around with you than to carry unforgiveness and judgment and the weight of, you know, your ego riding your shoulders all the time. It's easier to live in that flow.
So. Yes, absolutely. I wanted to ask you a couple other points before we wrap it up. One was, why do you think that we're experiencing the shifting now versus when this actual 2012 date arrives? Is it, in my opinion, I feel that energy doesn't follow the calendar exactly, so I feel as though this shift has been moving in for quite some time, but they do mark the official date as being December 21st, 2012.
Well,
so what are your
thoughts
on that?
Well, and the Mayans did. You know, the Mayans, their math, their cosmic timekeeping, they knew that certain events would happen in a fashion and so many years would go by. So to them, it was like clock keeping on a big grand scale clock of sky watching. And I'm, like I said, I'm, even though my book says 2012, a new era begins, I just feel like we are, let's call it a window. You could say maybe a 10-year window before and a 10-year window after 2012, that we will look back maybe 500 years in the past and go, wow, it's interesting that humanity, even ancient humanity, had this forecast of a 2012 time marker in mind, and lo and behold, wow, technology exploded around 2012. Interconnectivity, the world environment changed in 2012. The global economy melted around this same window of time. So I'm not a believer that, you know, anything the day of, but the process. And, you know, it's interesting to note that these processes seem kind of geared to about every 5,000 years. The Mayan calendar, long count calendar, the one that ends on December 21st, 2012, is a 5,000-year calendar. Well, you go back 5,000 years ago, was the last major huge shift for the human experience. We moved sort of out of hunter-gatherer into an agrarian fixed society. And you go 5,000 years back before that, and you get sort of post-Ice Age man living like almost a caveman existence to more hunter-gatherer traveling in tribes existence. So these 5,000-year markers seem to be something that our species kind of vibrates with, that these cultural jumps do seem to happen in these 5,000-year time spans, whether you're talking about the Mayans or not, or the Age of Aquarius or not. It's there, and that's fascinating. One thing we didn't talk about, were you going to bring the 1111?
That's the next question, actually.
Okay.
I wanted to get your opinion on, and just as a side comment about what you were talking about, yes, I do believe that things go in cycles. I mean, you know, I'm a numerology person, so I know that things move in cycles, and also astrology goes by the notion that things go in cycles. So, yes, I agree with you on that. But, yeah, I wanted to get your thoughts on the 11-11 and why are we seeing this? I mean, yes, the Mayan calendar ends on a particular date and time, and 11-11 is the time. But why are we physically seeing this? Is this just a coincidence, or is this, you know, what do you feel about this whole 11-11, seeing this number sequence everywhere?
Well, if it's a coincidence, it is a cosmic coincidence on the grandest scale, because for decades, and maybe since just the invention of digital clocks, there have been people who feel oddly triggered by seeing 11-11. And for me, it goes back to the early 80s. It was 82 or so that I started noticing 11-11. And, you know, we pre-internet, pre-connectivity, you thought it was just your own strange experience, that something significant. It really felt like almost like an angel was tapping you on your shoulder going, wake up to something, you know, notice something. It drove people crazy almost to think, why am I having it? And all of a sudden the internet explodes our worldview, and we realize people all over the world are feeling not only triggered when they see 11-11, which makes it a phenomenon, a true phenomenon. If you want to talk about what is a phenomenon, that people all over the world feel triggered by it, but that they attach a similar meaning to it. And that meaning is, it's almost like transition or growth, or it taps into our spiritual nature, a bigger picture, something big picture is trying to come through and speak to me and get my attention. Why would people feel that by seeing, you know, four ones on a clock? It doesn't necessarily make sense, and yet they did. So, you know, that was just a thing that I kept in the back of my mind for the longest time, and here I'm doing my research on writing my story, and I knew now it was going to incorporate the Mayan calendar and 2012 and this shift consciousness mentality. And I remember reading on one of the, like a chat group or something, it's like, well, maybe those people who saw 11-11 really knew something after all. And I'm like, well, what are they talking about involving 11-11 with 2012? And sure enough, the U.S. Naval Observatory is the official branch of government that gives these time designations to celestial events. And the event that ends the Mayan calendar is the winter solstice of 2012, and that will happen at 11 minutes after it, on December 21st, so at 11:11. And I'm just like, okay, here's another overlay of, it seems like so many arrows from so many different directions are trying to get our attention. It's like, if you're focused on 2012, you're getting this shift consciousness into higher awareness. If you're talking about Mayan calendar, if you're talking about Age of Aquarius, if you're just looking at the world around us and seeing a fall away of the old and an incorporation of the new, you get all the, and then from 11-11ers, this same message. And here it clocks in, this coincidence that this moment in time, this exclamation mark moment in time, will occur at 11:11. It's like, wow, how can we turn a blind eye to what is going on, that it seems like a real message is trying to make itself known to the entire human mind, you know, the human awareness, and it's coming out in bits and pieces here and there. A little bit of it's in my story. Some of it's being done by you. Other people, I mean, everybody around the world has got something to contribute to it if they open up to it, but it just feels like a true, genuine thing is manifesting, and I can't call it a piece of fiction anymore, even though that's the way I presented it in my book. It feels like genuinely something is happening.
Absolutely, I agree. So, Eric, you're writing another book, and I wanted to put this in there. I know you're just in the early stages, but this is going to be a nonfiction book, is it not?
That's the way it's going. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I'm so excited to hear that, because I think this book is going to be even better than the first, definitely, because I think that when people read your first book, they're going to be intrigued and want to know more, and then your second book is going to fill in the more. And I know you're just in the early stages, and I firmly believe it's going to fall together pretty quickly. So I can't wait to hear it or to read it. And so how is that coming? Is it any more?
You know what? As I get into it, it's been a lot of work, this last book, the actual process of writing something that's good enough to be read by a reading public, you know, the editing process, the promotional process. It's a lot of work, no doubt.
Yeah.
So to
yeah.
jump into that again, I mean, I certainly haven't gotten rich from writing my first book. I did it really because I felt sort of on some level I had an obligation to do it, and I was lucky enough to meet the people in my life that helped me pursue it and follow through with it, almost like carry me through the process. And I have to trust that process again. As I sit down and write, the beautiful part is the information is flowing very easily now,
and
I just love that. I sit there and just go, okay, the topics come, the fill for talking about that topic comes. So I am very excited, and hopefully it's something that fits it. You know, fills its little niche when the time comes.
Yep, I'm sure it will. So thank you so much, Eric, for joining us. We have a few minutes left, so I'm going to wrap this up. But I'd like to let everyone know that if they want to buy the book, visit your website. Is there a link on the website to buy the book?
There is, and it's available
okay.
in Kindle format and ebook format. You can buy it from Amazon bookstores. It's available through all the distributors. If it's not on the shelf in your bookstore, just tell them to order it, and they will find it. It's The Aquarians. By Eric Rankin. The website again is theaquarianage.com. You can read free excerpts of the book. There's a couple of chapters you can download in a PDF file and read. Take the quiz. You can hear this really cool rap song that a fan of the book, he was a rapper in LA, he loved it, said, I want to help you promote, you know, this whole message, and listen to the song. It's just amazing. It's gotten 70,000 hits or so on YouTube. So all very exciting and fun things.
Yes, and I encourage you to check it out. It's a really interesting website, really fascinating information. So thank you again, Eric. I'd like to sign off with you because I need to intro the next show, but it was really a great chat. Always fascinating to talk with you, and definitely keep in touch with me.
We will definitely do that. Thanks very much, Michelle.
Thank you.
All right.
Okay, guys, next Thursday I'm going to have a special guest, Mark Peebler, better known as Dr. Dream. He'll be joining me on air, and Dr. Dream is a dedicated entrepreneur, humanitarian, and international speaker with over 20 years' experience in mentoring and empowering students, organizations, and corporations in building, reaching, and sustaining their full potential. In 2004, he began his energetically inspiring program, Dream the Biggest Dream. Dr. Dream has traveled the world assisting the journeys of thousands of people on their path to unconditional love. For more information on Mark or about his work, you can go to drdream.com or touroflove.com. So join us next week, everyone. It was a great show, and join us again for another great episode of Surviving the Shift on Thursday. Good night, everyone.